Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. It's a real honor. I'm enjoying the new CD.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I like it.
It has a very intimate feel, an atmospheric feel to it. Like I'm sitting in a dimly lit, smoky bar watching you showcase your skills. And I can feel the passion and honesty dripping through the speakers. Do you think this is your most ambitious record yet?
This is 2020. It was complex to put together.
Yeah.
Because it's own thing. And so a lot of layering and thinking through. And the text just was, you know, the melodies and everything. And no drums on this record. It's hard to make a record without drums, which gives it a slightly different feel. I mean, a couple of people said, oh, this is subdued. Some guys said, no, not subdued at all. It's joyous. It's more introspective. And I think one of the reasons people say that's because there's no drums on it. So it's more like composed and somewhat like maybe, I suppose you could say, chamber music. But like the first piece and the last piece, a certain strangeness is very, you know, meditative, slow, thoughtful kind of playing, almost like a sort of slow rock, and that's the sort of feel I had in mind.
Yeah. You know, is it challenging to write instrumental music like Fantagia or Mirror in the Dirt that evoke emotion, or do you leave that up to the listener to find their own emotional perspective to your songs? Suspenseful, that song. I really liked it. I felt.
Yeah, that was a late addition. And of course, it's very different because it is clean guitar. Which is really composed all the way through, and all the parts are made to complement the guitar. So it's a slightly different approach to a piece like that. I just sit at home and write it out on a, you know, in manuscript. You know, I found my way with it in the studio, but it's very compositional.
No, that's great. You know, I find it fascinating, the names of these songs. How do you come up with the names?
Well, as someone who does this for a living, I'm engaged with this all my life, you know, and very into, you know, writing and literature and all that. And of course, you know, along the way, I noticed certain things, you know, that would be a good title or something. So, I actually have a list on my computer of things that I would use as titles, you know, little phrases or things like that that I pick up and that. Sometimes it's just I make them up, you know, certain phrases made up, you know, some of these things just, I come up with to reflect what the music might be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something simple like Spell, which is basically it's a solo guitar piece played on a steel dobro guitar. That's all it is, you know, in a special tuning. So that's what it's felt like to me, like Spell, incantation, that kind of thing. That's sort of the mood of it. It's one of my favorite pieces, actually.
That was a beautiful piece. You touched upon this earlier. Do you typically improvise a lot of your songs or your solos, or do you work them out note for note structurally in advance?
Oh, no, the solos completely improvised.
Yeah.
They're all improvised, you know. I mean, the way it works, usually, you know, I'm a very good guitar improviser. I like to admit that. You get down to how do you play your instrument. If you're an improviser, everyone has comes to the way they phrase eventually, and it becomes personal. And I definitely feel that I have that. It's not composed. It's, you know, what I'll do, you know, like most of the way these things work is I'll set up the harmonic structure and I try to get very non-traditional structures. They're not like, you know, what in jazz we call, you know, 2-4-5 things, that kind of thing, or 1-6-2-4-5. Mm-hmm. In terms of musical harmony, these are much stranger and much more avant-garde than that. So once I get used to those and the scales on them, you know, I sort of survey the terrain, I run the scales. I have to kind of get used to it. You know, if I'm going from sort of strange flavor and then to, I don't know, D major or D flat or other altered, I have to kind of work out the scales so that I have a guide to, you know, how to travel through the terrain. Mm-hmm. And then I start having a go at it, and I don't like to spend too long on these tones because I get fairly quickly, and I am a player, so it's sort of like that. You know, they're not booked out for hours or I mean, I read some book recently about, was it a program or something? Maybe it was CS, I don't know. How, you know, the pop bands worked out all the guitar solos exactly. They were like, they worked them out. Well, it's not my approach at all. Because I grew up trying to play bebop. I was in, my soloing is much more.
When inspiration strikes you, what do you do to capture it?
I mean, that is literally, you can't always do it like that because, you know, most of these things are a setup. But, you know, if I get into a writing mode at home, you know, I start, you know, kind of come up with something on the guitar, for instance. You know, I actually use something called a Zoom recorder. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, I have that at hand, you know, and occasionally, you know, I feel more comfortable in life if I've got one of those within a few feet and I start playing and suddenly, you know, some of these things just appear all of a sudden. Didn't plan it, but you hit something on your instrument and it pops out. You go, hang on, I better like it. That sort of goes away, you know, because you know, we probably all made the same mistake. I go, oh, I'll remember that. I'll come back to it later. And then you never do.
Exactly.
You've got to grab it at that moment. So I always have a very nice Zoom recorder around, of course, in the studio. I have an engineer. I mean, a certain strangeness piece was, I got a brand new pedal, effects pedal, and I plugged it in. I thought it was so great, and I found it inspiring immediately. And I said, "Quick, put the tape on. Let me get this. I'm in the mood, you know." Mm-hmm. And we recorded it, and it was the first piece. It was a 20-minute improv.
No, that's a great song, great piece. Yeah, you know, I have to believe it's the same way with your photography. Are you always carrying around a camera with you in case something great comes across?
Yeah, a lot of the time. Always when traveling, you know, I go out sometimes to photograph because I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, I like, for instance, set a theme and go, okay, I'm just going to do architecture today or hard shadows in bright sunlight or whatever it might be. And that I find kind of inspiring. It kind of wakes the mind in a reasonable sense.
Yeah.
So, but it is. It's all improvised. And I think being a musical improviser all my life was a great preparation for doing, you know, photography out in the world,
Good stuff. Have you ever taken what you thought was an amazing photo only to get home and realize that it didn't transfer well from digitally to visually?
Yeah, that happens a long way. You know, I mean, the thing is with the new era that we've all got digital cameras now, these are like an M10. You can shoot, you know, 700 to 800 photographs on a card. There's bound to be a few bloopers in there. Occasionally, you actually hit the button by mistake. You know, I try to be disciplined about that. You know, when I've gone off to, for instance, I went to China like 8 times and traveled all over it, took thousands of photographs. But you have to have a bit of discipline. I don't just sort of, you know, because those film cards are so tiny.
Yep.
You've got to be very careful with not to lose them. And I you know, in my case, literally, I would transfer them down at night onto my computer. So I had another backup as well. Yeah, that became quite necessary.
Oh, yeah, I do the same too. As soon as I get home, I download all my pictures immediately so I don't lose them or erase them by accident.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let me say, I have to imagine it's maybe the same thing when you're with guitar playing and writing and being inspired, is that one day you're on fire and the next day not so much. Do you find that's the case when you're writing for this
song? Oh, absolutely. All my life, yeah. You know, you can't expect to be on every time you go, oh, this record, oh, I just got to write an incredible composition. You know, generally works is, you know, let's say I want to try and write something today and you spend 2 hours, you know, and just come up with a lot of dreck, and then you go, fuck it, I'm done. And then, and the last thing you play is the thing. This has happened to me so many times. You go, okay, I don't care anymore. And then something just pops out from nowhere, and that was what you were looking for all along. It's a beast, you know. You work at your craft, you listen to things, you try to have an idea where you're going, and then, you know, these things just sort of have their own, you know, way of, you know, dealing with it. They arise.
Yeah. Was there
That's what they do, they arise.
Was there any song on this album that came to you as a gift? Maybe at the end of a 2 hour session, or before you know, just as you picked up the guitar?
Most of these. Well, I mean, the very first one, A Certain Strangeness, which is the first half. The second half is A Strange Return. That was it. That was purely in the moment. I, you know, got the sound and went straight for it. You know.
That's awesome.
And that pointed me into making the album.
That's awesome. You know, tell me a little bit about the set of disciplines that are required to create this type of music that you put together. It's got to be not easy. Do you work with even more to click track too? You know, tell me a little bit about the process of it.
Well, it is a process. I mean, it's interesting. These last three albums that I've made, I didn't sit down at home. I used to do this because I've got so much of it. Sit down and write out composition and manuscript. I started to use something called Sibelius to get them all exactly right. I've got a load of them. These were all made from the attitude of trying to start the tracks with something very fresh, like a sound that I would find maybe by using different pedal combinations. And once I got that sound, it would sort of aim me into completing a composition. Mm-hmm. So I would get a sound that, like, oh, that's really fresh. That doesn't sound like anybody else. Okay, give me like a 32-bar click at this tempo, and I'll put something down, and then see if it inspired me to either write a melody on the top or create a B section that was harmonically different, or a C section, and then maybe another section which would be open for the guitar solo. So there is a kind of a methodology to it. It's partly hoping to be inspired, sometimes forcing the inspiration by, you know, what you've got around you. In fact, I've played guitar all my life, and, you know, I can come up with stuff pretty quickly. I think the real challenge is to come up with something that doesn't really sound like anyone else, sounds like you, and you make your own statement with it. You know, that sort of interests me, being sort of like on the cutting edge and being in that place, not like just knocking out something that everyone else who plays a guitar has knocked out. I try to avoid all cliches.
No, that's great. You did a fantastic job on this CD, so kudos to you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
I'm intrigued by the artwork. It's kind of it's very haunting. it looks very spiritual to me. You know, maybe that wasn't the case. Could you share a little bit about that and how that ties into the title?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the Harmonics of the Night, you know, even that itself is sort of introspective title. Imagine, you know, nighttime. For me, cities, people, dreaming, sleeping, you know, eating, whatever. Just the, you know, the things that occur at night, you know, because I've traveled so much around the world and all these different cities I've been in, like Tokyo, Shanghai, Rome, wherever. This photograph that's on the front was shot in Beijing, China. I went to a show. This guy, I had a photographer on, and the promoter of that took me to see this amazing sort of theatrical performance by an Argentinian group called Fuerza Bruta. And they did all kinds of stuff. And I just had a ball being in there and having my Leica. And, you know, they were traveling over our heads, climbing the walls and just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And that shot of the girl was somewhere they descended from the stage into the audience, and these girls were doing stuff with the audience. There was probably someone up over her head, actually.
Wow.
And that's where that shot was taken.
It's very haunting. Was it a haunting theatrical, or was it more like fun? It's hard to tell from the picture.
Well, yeah, no, it was quite haunting in a way. I mean, it was, you know, a lot of fun because they did such crazy stuff. They were all like people in their yeah, I mean, the girls cycled over all the walls. It was kind of a cruel show.
Yeah,
amazing. It actually blew my mind, and I was so pleased to see it, and actually managed to put, I have a lot of photographs from it, and, you know, I was there with my camera, and I got a lot of very unusual photography from that one.
Awesome. You know, speaking of photography, your music, planning any tours coming up? You know, you do the visual storytelling tour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a long conversation this morning with my manager about that. It's all going to be next year. You know, I started doing the multimedia show, which is me appearing solo on stage. I have a gigantic screen, and I have all these sequences of photography projected onto it, and I play to them, sometimes in backing tracks, sometimes just with sort of amazing guitar effect. Solo. Mm-hmm. I do some solo guitar and I talk to the audience and all that kind of stuff. I do a very fast collage of the very early days touring in America, which I shop, and do kind of a version of Message in a Bottle. Yeah.
Very cool. And I hope you come to New York City or New Jersey, so I'd love to see that show.
I did two shows in New York City. One at some kind of very fancy club place, and the other at the Metropolitan Museum of Art,
right,
which was a great success. Yeah.
So I'm hoping, you know, when I come back, I want to see that, and I want to take.
Well, as far as I know, I think I'm going to do some stuff in May and June and possibly July, on and off in Europe. Then it looks like late September, October, all over Europe, and then I think the guy is interested in putting American dates in as well after that.
That's great. Awesome. I want to be respectful to your time. My last question, a lot of people associate the Police as music with some of their best memories. What's it like being such an integral part of people's music collections?
Well, I love it. You know, like I said, it's very nice. You know, I mean, sure, like if you work hard at it and you're trying to make it from nothing into something, and then you eventually actually touch people's lives and give them very good feelings, I think that's a huge reward. Mm-hmm. Apart from any financial rewards or anything, the thing that is that you got through to people and may help them somehow with music, nothing better.
That's awesome. That's a great insightful answer, Andy.
Thank you
so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All
it was a real honor. Thank you again. Have a good day.
Great talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Again, thank you, Andy, for your time and for sharing your insights about Harmonics of the Night. For all of our listeners, a reminder that Andy Summers' new studio album, Harmonics of the Night, is currently out and available. Visit Cargo Records or Amazon to order your copy. His album is also available digitally on all the streaming platforms. Also, this interview is available in several platforms as well, including YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and of course on our website and social media sites. To close things up, here's the first single from Andy's album, A Certain Strangeness.
Thank you.